RadioInfluence.com.
This is Beyond the Badge on Radio Influence. A look inside the biggest and most controversial news stories you need to know now. One of the country's most relied upon law enforcement analysts, Vincent Hill.
Good evening and welcome to Beyond the Badge. I am your host, Vincent Hill, of course, coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do each and every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com. And speaking of my guys over at RadioInfluence.com, if you don't know who they are and what they're about, it's definitely bigger than just me and Beyond the Badge. When they came to me several months ago and said they wanted me to be part of the RadioInfluence.com family, I was excited, but I was also curious. But I tell you, Radio Influence is not just Beyond the Badge. I mean, it is the premier of digital radio. They have everything you need. Your sports, from MMA to all my MMA fans, wrestling to all my WWE fans. They have a great talk show called Dangerous Conversations with Scott Ledger. Just a whole variety of shows for listeners to listen to. So if you're curious, if you want great radio content, I encourage you, check out RadioInfluence.com. I'm sure you will find a show that you like. Now, Jerry, you owe me for that one, buddy, but that's between me and you. Now, let's get down to Beyond the Badge business. Now, for tonight's show, I had this idea plan that I was going to do, and I'll talk about it for just a minute. I don't know if any of my listeners have been watching The People vs. O.J. Simpson on FX. So what I had planned to do this week was to actually talk about that case, dissect that case, and let you know my thoughts on that case. Now, I can tell you a little bit about what I was going to do. Now, 20 years ago, when this whole thing happened, I was just a young black kid going into the Army in my 20s who saw this pursuit, who saw O.J. Simpson, who saw him get off. And, you know, truthfully, I was one of those black people that wouldn't have believed OJ did it simply because of race and didn't want to believe it. Just like most of the black people in the country were at that time, back in the 90s. Now, when I look at it from what I'm trained to do now, look at the evidence, and as much as I've read about the case and watched about the case and got a chance to go to the crime scene out in California and listen to O.J. Simpson's hidden tapes, the police officer in me has his own opinion about what really happened that day and who's responsible for it. And I was going to talk about that on tonight's show. My goal was to get someone that was heavily involved in the case on the show with me to talk about it. I still plan on doing that at a later date. This series on FX, I believe, is going on for another 8 weeks or so. So between now and those 8 weeks, I plan on doing that show. I promise you that. But the reason my idea for tonight's show changed was because over this past weekend, I had a lot of people emailing me on Facebook, via Twitter, you name it. They were reaching out to me based on an article that was on FoxNews.com. And the article is titled "Deafening Silence, Obama and 2016 Dems Numb on Recent Police Deaths." Now, anyone that knows me knows I don't like to go into politics. But tonight, I'm going to touch on politics. I'm going to touch on politics and policing. And I'm going to touch on what this article says and some of the things that really have me ticked off as former law enforcement and as a supporter of law enforcement. Now, I will say this, and there's a lot of people that won't agree with it or won't understand this, but when you look at it from a political standpoint, the majority of police officers in this country, whether they admit it, whether they want to admit it, whether they have thought about it, are either Republican or are very conservative by nature. I didn't think I would ever say, as a black man, that I am conservative. But after being on a police department, after dealing with some of the things that the nation's police are dealing with right now and seeing the way I see life, seeing the things that happen, I am very conservative in my beliefs. And a lot of police officers, even though they don't start out that way, are very conservative. And the other majority are Republicans. But we're going to dig deep into that and as to why police go the way they do or lean the way they do, as people say. Now, remember a few weeks ago I did the show and I talked about how it was open season on police and how the current administration, which would mean President Obama and his Department of Justice, by their actions, by their silence, they condone this open season on police. Now let's look into this deeply. Let's go to Ferguson. Now I'm not talking Michael Brown, I'm not talking riots, I'm talking the Department of Justice suing the city of Ferguson for police reform. When has the federal government come into a city and sued a department for police reform? And this all sparked because of Michael Brown and the shooting of this unarmed black male. But let's not forget, first of all, that it was the Department of Justice, the same one that is now suing the city of Ferguson, who actually cleared Officer Wilson in the shooting, because the current administration didn't think that the officers, the elected officials in Ferguson, were actually doing what they were supposed to do, so they went in to investigate this white officer shooting this unarmed black male. And what happened when they did that? Their conclusion was that, yes, Michael Brown was fighting with the officer inside of the police vehicle, as the officer testified to in his grand jury statement, based on blood evidence found in that officer's vehicle. So in order to save face, what does the Department of Justice do? Ooh, I know, Mr. President. Let's sue the city of Ferguson for police misconduct and demand reform. Well, here's my question. What misconduct are you speaking of? Because you cleared Officer Wilson in the shooting of Michael Brown, which sparked the whole Black Lives Matter and the riots. And it sparked all of this divisiveness. So what misconduct are you speaking of? And what reform are you looking for? Is there a police reform issue here? Or is there a crime reform, crime prevention issue here? So let's look at some of the things that the Department of Justice and Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, said needs to change in Ferguson. Now, a quote from Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, says, "The residents of Ferguson have suffered the deprivation of their constitutional rights, the rights guaranteed to all Americans, for decades. They have waited decades for justice. They should not be forced to wait any longer." Now, I guess I'm confused. What justice are we looking for, and what deprivation of rights, constitutional rights, is she talking about? So the actual report that the DOJ did is 105 pages. And I'm looking over some of this, and it says, "Ferguson law enforcement practices disproportionately harm Ferguson's African-American residents and are driven in part by racial bias." Okay. "Ferguson's police department exercise of discretion, even when lawful, often undermines community trust and public safety." So, the exercise of discretion, even when lawful, which means you can take someone to jail. Officer discretion, when lawful. So that's unconstitutional. And it goes on to say that Ferguson police stopped more black people than white people, and they used the black community for a source of revenue, because, of course, when someone writes a ticket, they have to pay a fine. But let's look into these really close, and you tell me if this was racially motivated or was it something else? Do we need this police reform that the Department of Justice and Loretta Lynch are speaking so highly about, or is there a bigger issue in Ferguson? So let's take a look at this. The city of Ferguson itself is only 6.2 square miles. Now, when I was in patrol, my patrol zone, my section, my precinct was about that amount, 6.2 square miles. So you're talking about the entire city being confined to 6.2 square miles. Now, inside of that 6.2 square miles, you have a population demographically of 67.4% black, 29.3% white, and of course the remaining percentage goes to the other races, Asian, Latino, you have it. It goes to those races. So, when you're looking at demographics, when you're looking at crime, when you're looking at traffic stops in this 6.2 square miles, when you have a population of 67.4% black, African American, who do you think, and this is just a wild guess because I'm not a mathematician, who do you think are out committing more traffic offenses? These simple traffic stops that the Department of Justice say are unconstitutional. The Department of Justice says police are just stopping them because it's a source of income. Well, here's a newsflash, Department of Justice. Traffic tickets in any department, state, city, local, is a source of income. Because when you get a traffic violation, you're required to pay a fine. I'm sure it's the same in Greenwich, Connecticut, where the population of black people is probably about 2%. But I assure you, if a white person in Greenwich, Connecticut gets stopped, they're going to get fined. They're going to have to pay the fine. So is that racially motivated or is that demographic? So we have 67.4% of the population in 6.2 square miles getting pulled over for traffic violations. Is this really racially biased? Because that was part of your reform that you wanted. You wanted to teach police to be less racially biased. But as I've always said, and I will continue to say, and I will say forever, crime brings police. Color does not bring police. So is a traffic stop a crime to some people? No, it's not a crime. To some people, it's racial. To some people, it's harassment. It's unconstitutional. But remember, how many murderers have I found on a traffic stop? How many guns that were stolen have I recovered on a traffic stop? How many ounces and pounds of drugs have I recovered on a simple traffic stop? So, what the Department of Justice may see as unconstitutional, that's the nature of policing. You investigate why someone's driving down the street in this 6.2 square miles with a busted taillight. You investigate why they're driving down this 6.2 square miles with an expired registration. And I'm sure that the white population, the Hispanic, the Asian, if they were doing the same thing in Ferguson, and I'm sure it's documented somewhere, probably just not in this Department of Justice report, that they got pulled over and they got fined. So again, where is this unconstitutional policing that's happening in the black community in Ferguson? Where is this police reform that we're talking? What are we reforming? What is your plan, Loretta Lynch? What is your plan to go into Ferguson and to say, hey, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, and community relations with police will be 100% better. A, that is a lie, because I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm speaking as a former officer and I'm speaking as a black man in the black community. I don't care what you do, and this is long before, when I was in patrol, it was long before the Black Lives Matter movement and the Michael Browns, the Freddie Grays, the Eric Gardners, the Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin. It was long before that, but in the black community, People don't take kindly to police, period. Whether you have police reform, whether you have kumbayas, whether you sit down and have a prayer vigil, people do not take kindly to police in the black communities. So you can talk about this police reform that you're going to have to make policing less racially biased, but the bigger issue is, what are we going to do to make crime less in the black community? This is what the Department of Defense needs to be focused on, not this police reform. Let's talk crime prevention, because here's what happened in Ferguson. After Michael Brown, they put a black face in as chief, the token black guy. Let's call it what it is. They put the token black guy there as the chief of police in Ferguson. But that goes back to what I said. People in the black community don't respect police. So do you think that crime went down when they put the token black guy as the chief of police in Ferguson? Heck no, it didn't go down. Do you think that the crime in Baltimore went down because they have a black mayor and a black city prosecutor? Heck no, it didn't go down. Because the fact of the matter is, whether you like this or you don't like it, black communities, for the most part, 99.9%, when you're dealing with police coming into that community, they don't respect them. And police reform does not reduce crime. So another thing that was in that report that kind of bothered me, it said, Ferguson's police lack of community engagement increases the likelihood of discriminatory policing and damages public trust. But what did I just say? The black community as a whole doesn't trust police. They don't respect police. But here's the thing. Ferguson Police Department of Justice, whether you realize it or not, but I'm sure you know about it because you investigated their entire police department, they do have community outreach programs. They do have a DARE program to keep kids off drugs, to keep kids out of gangs. They have all of these things that your average police department in this country has. That doesn't necessarily mean the people in the community are sending their children to these programs, making sure their children are part of these programs to go learn and benefit from these programs and how to be a conductive, productive member of society. So this 102-page document that you have, to me, does not solve the problem in Ferguson at all. To me, it sounds like a political agenda for this administration to say, yes, look what we did in Ferguson. We sued the police department and we made them act racially unbiased. You are so fooling yourself and you are so fooling this country if you think that's going to work, because it's not going to work. And the one I laughed at the most, and I already touched on it, but Ferguson's lack of diverse police force further undermines community trust. Well, when I was in the projects of East Nashville, and take me out of my uniform and take me out of my suit, I look like your average black guy, 6'1", 210 pounds, low haircut. I think I look pretty young for my age, but I look like your average black guy. So, put my uniform on, put me in the projects of East Nashville. I would say that's diversity. I would say so. I'm a black guy in a black neighborhood, but I'm trying to remember one time when I was in Soto Court in East Nashville, and all my guys in Nashville PD that have been on a while know what I'm talking about. Man, I can't remember one time when someone said, oh, hi, Mr. Officer. Can you sit down and talk to me and tell me a great story? Nope, can't remember it. But I can remember how I got the F word, the N word, the Uncle Tom word. I can remember when people wanted to fight me. I can remember when people ran from me. I can remember when people had guns on them when I was approaching them. I can remember all of that. But hey, it was diverse, right? It was diversity. You had this black guy who looked like the community. So surely everyone there is going to enjoy this black guy coming to be this great community police officer to sit down and talk about all these great things and how we can make the relationship between the community and the public great. Didn't happen. So, Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, the administration, if you want to go out and investigate departments, you can go out and investigate every department in this country. You're probably going to find the exact same thing you say you found in Ferguson. And here's why. Because that is your agenda to go out and find these things. Now, let's be honest. In the 1950s, 60s, 70s, maybe even the 80s, was there racial discrimination in police departments? Were there white officers doing things they shouldn't do to black people? Absolutely. I don't think anybody will dispute that. But in this day and age, in 2016, because you have one kid who was supposedly with his hands up in a city like Ferguson, and it sparks this outrage in the black communities nationwide, now all of a sudden you want to step in and say, ooh, let's fix the police departments. Ooh, let's make sure that these white officers are treating black people the way they should be. Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. A little secret, Department of Justice. You may not want to hear this. 99.983% of the white officers that are patrolling in black neighborhoods are already treating black people the way they're supposed to be treated. Let's not forget all these videos that we see of white officers in black communities stopping to play basketball or football with little kids in the black community. Let's not forget the white officer in Gainesville, Florida, who got Shaquille O'Neal to go to the black neighborhood and to play basketball with those little boys. So what you're trying to do, to force these officers to do, it's already done. It's there. So, like I said, you're fooling yourself, you're fooling this country to think that you're actually doing anything in the city of Ferguson or whatever city you decide to go to next. It's a joke. But here's what's not a joke. Here's what's ironic and sickening and sad all at the same time. You have Democrats that are already in office. You have Democrats that are running for office who are condemning these police for this mistreatment of black people in this country. And let's be honest, for those that are in office, it's their political agenda. For those that are trying to get to that office, it's to secure the black vote, because that's what you need to do as a Democrat to be successful, is to secure the black vote. Otherwise, you don't get into office. Just ask the former Clinton. What did he do? He secured the black vote. So now you have the other Clinton supporting Black Lives Matter and supporting this to get the black vote. But what's sickening, what's sad is that not one Democrat that I can recall has spoke out against the violence against police officers. Now, this past week was a very horrific and tragic week in policing. Just a few miles from me, there was an officer shot and killed while serving a high-risk warrant. Over the last week, six officers have been shot and killed in this country. Out of that six, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe all of those were shot by a male black suspect. But here's what's sickening, here's what's sad to me. I don't hear President Obama, Loretta Lynch, Department of Justice, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, anybody else on the Democratic ticket speaking out against that. But what I do hear about is how Hillary Clinton, who's running for the Democratic ticket, says she would support Black Lives Matter movement through police reform. Well, what about the six officers that just lost their lives? Do you think their actions called for reform? Do you think their death calls for police reform? No, their death calls for crime control and crime reform. You know, it really gets under my skin that in Washington, D.C., there's Democrats who voted to pay $9,000 a year for potentially violent offenders. And most of those violent offenders have previous gun charges. So, let's pay them $9,000 a year to not do crime, even though they have the high chance that they will do it, even though they've pulled a gun and maybe even shot someone before. I know, let's pay them $9,000 a year so they don't do it again. Yeah, that works. I can see that working just as well as it worked for the city of Chicago when they tried it. And we know the history and the track record of Chicago, but this plan in D.C. is backed and supported by the Democratic Party. Because what do these Democrats need to get into office? The black vote. So if I say, I know what we're going to do. We're going to pay you $9,000. Not to be a criminal. But make sure you tell all your relatives who are not convicted felons, because I'm assuming the people they're paying the $9,000 to that have previous gun charges are likely convicted felons. Make sure you tell your relatives to vote for me to get me in the office, because once I get in that office, I'm going to have your best interest at heart. I'm going to go for police reform, Black Lives Matter. It will be great. Just vote for me. But if you read up on this DC thing, they've tried it in a lot of major cities and it hasn't worked. It goes back to the barbaric days when people, cities, would pay the barbarians not to destroy their cities. And what did the barbarians do? They took the money and guess what they did? They destroyed the city anyway. So now we have Democrats saying, let's pay someone $9,000 a year, which, by the way, is going to come out of your pocket, my pocket. It's definitely not coming out of the person's pocket who's getting the money. Let's pay them $9,000 a year not to commit these crimes. Okay, you're going to give me $9,000, and all I got to do is not get caught? Because believe you me, they're not going to stop doing crime just because you're giving them $9,000 a year just to make sure your party gets in office. It's politics. It's politics. Here's what a conservative guy, just like myself and probably a whole bunch of police officers, would say to a plan like that where you want to pay a criminal to not do crime. Here's what we would tell you to do with that money, because you're talking $9,000, and I think they said they were going to do this to 200 people, so you do the math on that, $9,000 a month times 200 times 12 months, you tell me how much it is. You take that money, you put that in police resources, whether it's police programs, whether it's getting more officers on the street, whether it's getting the officers the equipment they need, and let's see how much that crime reduces. Or, better yet, you take that money that you're going to spend and you put it into rehabilitation programs inside the prison. So when these people go to prison for these gun charges, they actually get rehabilitated. Or you take that money and you come up with a plan to reduce gun crimes, to reduce guns in that city. But to pay someone $9,000 to just say, hey, don't go out and be a bad guy, maybe I'm in the wrong business, because, I can get $9,000 a year, likely tax-free, for doing nothing. Maybe I just need to move to D.C., get me a little part-time job that pays my light bill, and then just say, hey, I could be violent, so let me sign up for your program so I can get my $9,000 a year. Nope. I would tell you, those Democrats that signed this bill, that this is going to backfire on you in less than a year, because those same people that you're tracking will be back in your jails, will be back out on the street again to do the same crime, to be back in your jail, to be back on the street to do the same crime, to be back in your jail, to be back on the street. Wait a minute. Oh my God, that sounds like a pattern. That sounds like a pattern. Maybe you focus more on the prison system. Maybe you focus on crime prevention. That's free. Crime prevention is free. The last I checked, it didn't cost any money. You may have to go out and teach a class here and there. You may have to put more officers on the street. Oh, but wait, you can't do that because you want to pay 200 people $9,000 just to do nothing. Ah, that's right. So that's why that won't work. That's why crime prevention won't work, because you just want to pay the criminal instead of the people that actually put their lives on the line every day, night in, night out, for this guy that has a gun who could possibly shoot at him. And God forbid if he does, and the officer has to resort to using deadly force, because then we got the Department of Justice coming in and investigating, just like they did in San Francisco with the black guy who approached the officers with the knife. Oh, he was shot 20 times. The DOJ needs to investigate. Well, remember what I said. Police shoot into the target is eliminated. And in police mind, target eliminated means target is down. So when you have five or six officers surrounding one suspect who comes at an officer with a knife, remember, cutting weapon, and each officer maybe shoots four or five rounds, guess what? There's your 20 rounds right there. So does the city of San Francisco now need police reform? Was it the officer's fault that this guy lunged at him with the knife? No. Was it the officer's fault that he had marijuana, methamphetamines, and something else in his system? No. Did the officer know that before they pulled the trigger? No. But what they did know is that this suspect, take race out of the color, this suspect with a knife was approaching, and I know what someone's going to say. His hand was to his side when he was walking towards the officer, and I'm going to say, whoop-de-doo, because it takes him less than a second to raise that arm and slash that officer. So, the officer didn't know he had drugs in his system. He didn't know what his mental capacity was. He just knew this guy was approaching me with the knife. Those officers fired, and now everyone wants the Department of Justice to investigate, and people want to protest. Okay, you can protest until the cows come home, until they do another Chick-fil-A commercial, but it's not going to get you anywhere with those protests. Here's something I want to protest, and here's something I want to investigate. And, hell, quite frankly, I want the Department of Justice to investigate this. In South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, this report came out, and I got deep ties to Columbia, South Carolina. More people pulled guns on police during a record number of officer-involved shootings in 2015 compared to the previous year. And 26 of the 48 officer-involved shootings, a suspect pulled a gun on an officer. 26 out of 48 officer-involved shootings there in the state of South Carolina. Why is no one looking into that? Why is this current administration not saying, hey, it's not okay for an individual to pull a gun on police. And I've heard all the excuses. They were afraid because of the way police are treating black people now. Oh, he's mentally deranged, so he didn't know any better. Obviously, he wasn't too mentally deranged if he had a gun. So why is no one in the government, the Department of Justice, who's going around and saying that these police departments in this country are just so bad and they're so racist, why is nobody investigating when it's open season on police where 26 out of 48 officer-involved shootings, the suspect thought it was okay to pull a gun on a police officer? Why is no one investigating that? But you're so quick to investigate something that at the end of the day came down to a suspect resisting arrest with an officer. The officer having to use force. The officer having to use deadly force for whatever reason. You want to investigate that as long as it fits your political agenda, which equals black. If you're a Democrat, which equals if I stand up for this black family and I get enough support because I say I support this cause, I may get elected into office. Or if I am a black attorney general and I speak on all these black cases, this is going to cement my legacy. Or if I'm the first black president and I speak on all these cases where a black man was unjustly killed by police, it's going to cement my legacy as the first black president. Well, here's the thing, President Obama, with all due respect as my commander-in-chief, you have already secured your legacy simply by being the first African-American president in history. And there are plenty of people my age at the age of 43 who, when we were younger, we dreamt about it. We saw Richard Pryor doing comical skits about it, but we never visualized that we would ever see a black president. So you've already cemented your legacy just on that fact. But here's how you're cementing your legacy in a way that you don't want to. When you're silent on these cases where police are being killed, 6 in less than a week, when you're being silent against that, but when you want to fly to Ferguson and you want to speak about Trayvon Martin and say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. And when you want to go and talk about Michael Brown and you want to send in your squad to go into Ferguson and talk about police reform, and you want to talk about Chicago and police reform, when it only involves the black community, you are cementing your legacy. But the way you're submitting it, and there's going to be a lot of people that don't agree with this, you're racially dividing this country. You can't have it both ways to say, okay, as the commander-in-chief, as POTUS, hashtag POTUS, I'm going to speak out against the injustices of the black man, but I'm not going to speak out about the injustice against police officers, whether they're white, black, or whatever. I'm not going to do it. Or I'm going to send my dog squad in to Ferguson, the Department of Justice, to investigate because there's this racial bias after the death of Michael Brown. But I'm not even going to acknowledge a kid named Dylan Taylor who was killed just 5 days after Michael Brown, who was pretty much shot and killed the exact same way, minus Dylan wasn't fighting with the police officers. That's how you're cementing your legacy. It's not that you're the greatest president in history. It's not that you're the first black president, because yes, you had that distinction. There will probably never be another one, at least not in my lifetime. But what you're cementing as your legacy is the fact that based on your policies, based on your ideologies, based on your actions, you have racially divided this country. And sometimes I sit back and I think and I look. Now, I'm a child of the 70s. I was born in 73. So there's a lot of stuff I can't remember just simply because I was too young. But a decade before I came along, I read about and I've watched film and I've seen pictures of what this country was racially, and all the protests and all the riots and Watts and all of this other stuff. And sometimes I look at cities like Ferguson and Baltimore and Chicago, and I see all of that all over again. But it's not because there's this, all of a sudden there's this huge, huge race war coming, because people have been preaching that for hundreds of years. There's people that don't like different races. There's nothing you can do about that. But it's not because of that. It's because we had now said, oh, it's okay to segregate and say, oh, if a black man was killed by police, everything's racial and you got to march to it. You got to march about it. You got to protest. You have to. And now that I'm a Democratic presidential candidate, oh, I support the Black Lives Matter movement and police reform. I certainly do. Because when I do that, you're going to tell all your friends and family that, wow, look what this Democrat did for us. They supported the Black Lives Matter movement. We got to vote them in the office. But those guys, the Democratic Party, it's all a political agenda to meet their end game. Their end game is to get elected into office, to cement their legacy, to disrupt police departments. That is their end game. So if I had to tell someone, yep, I support your cause for me to get somewhere, chances are I might, nah, I take that back. Because anyone that knows me knows I'm a no-nonsense, no-BS type guy. So I wouldn't do that. But it's a political movement. Everything is political driven. So for all of those groups, the Black Lives Matter movement, the whatever movement, who demand police reform and are running to the Democratic ticket to get it, you're going to get exactly what you want until you're no longer needed, period. Because let's look at what Hillary Clinton said behind closed doors to some Black Lives Matter movement protesters at one of her conventions. She said, not having a concrete plan for your movement will get nothing but lip service from many white people. Lip service. Probably she needs to include herself into that lip service of many white people, because that's exactly what she's feeding you. Lip service. Yes, I support Black Lives Matter movement. I'm a white woman and I support it. As long as you get me into the White House, I support it. Now, I'm going to make a prediction, and I'm not a political analyst by any means, so I don't know who is going to win the presidency. But I can assure you, if Hillary Clinton does not win the presidency, this will be her one and only time that she stands behind supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. Because if she does not get elected into the White House, what would it benefit her to say, yes, I support this movement. I support police reform. But let me let you in on a little secret. All of you guys who think you have Hillary in your pocket with supporting the Black Lives Matter and police reform, it's not a secret. If you read your history, if you read up on Hillary Clinton, She's never been pro-police. She's never really liked police. So this agenda of police reform and supporting the Black Lives Matter has nothing to do with you. Hillary Clinton has been bashing police officers for years. It dates back a long time. If you don't believe me, read your history on Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate for the President of the United States. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So, don't be fooled by this whole rhetoric of, oh yeah, I support police reform because it needs to be done in the Black community. No, that's Hillary's agenda. Police reform to fit Hillary. And if she gets in office, what do you think she's going to do? All this stuff she's been talking about long before Michael Brown was even born, so let alone long before Black Lives Matter, what do you think her agenda is going to be at some point if she gets into office as it relates to police? And it's not going to be because of the Black Lives Matter. It's not going to be because of the millions upon millions upon millions of Black people that may get her in office. It's going to be because it's Hillary Clinton's long time agenda to do so. Remember when I said at the very start of this show that the majority of officers in this country are either very conservative, such as myself, or they're Republican. And I hope this show kind of gave you an idea of why that is. Because when you've worn that uniform, when you've seen the stuff that we've seen, when you've dealt with the people we've dealt with, when you've had to go into certain communities because of crime, not because of color, because there was a shooting, not because you wanted to harass a Michael Brown, because there was a stabbing, not because you wanted to go shoot a Tamir Rice, because there was a robbery, not because you wanted to go choke out Eric Garner. When you've dealt with this, and you've seen crime for what it is, and when you know that you're going into these communities because what? Crime brings police, not color. But yet, you're always being chastised. You're always being told that you're racist. You're always being told that you need to reform your ways. Forget about crime control. You need to reform your ways. Then you may understand why the majority of police officers are Republicans. Why the majority of police officers are very conservative. Because we know what it is, exactly what it is, because we live it, we breathe it, we sleep it, we bleed it, we cry about it every day of our lives. And those people in Washington, those people that are traveling around this country right now, trying to get to Washington, they have no clue. The only clue they have is how to get the black vote. And you get the black vote by supporting what you think is the majority of the black community and what they believe in. That's how you get the black vote. But you have no idea, Loretta Lynch, what it is to be a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. So before you go investigate them, why don't you go do a ride-along for a week or two? Or send one of your people to Ferguson to do a ride-along for a week or two and let them come back and say, out of the 30 cars that we stopped, only two people were white. Wait a minute. Only two people? That can't be right. Oh, well, yes, it is, because 67.4% of the population there in Ferguson is African American. So, by the numbers, statistics-wise, they're going to be the ones driving more vehicles, committing more crimes. It's statistics. It's demographics. It's not racism. So, go to Chicago and do a ride-along with those police officers and have a suspect jump out of a stolen vehicle that they just robbed someone 5 minutes before, and you're thinking a robbery and you see a black object in his hand and he's running from you. And you, as an officer, sworn officer, can legally shoot a fleeing suspect, especially if you think he's a threat to the public or to yourself. Let's see, threat to the public. He had just committed robbery. He just carjacked someone. He has a black object in his hand. The officer fires. Oh, it wasn't a gun. The officer didn't know it was a gun. Oh, let's send the Department of Justice to investigate. No. Go learn what policing is. Go learn what these officers go through every day. I don't need to learn it because I did it for over 5 years. I know it. I still see it in my sleep sometimes. But you have no idea. Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, you guys who are sitting here telling everyone, oh yeah, Black Lives Matter movement matters, police are racist, they need to be reformed, they need this, they need better training of how to deal with the black community, but none of you guys want to talk about what do we need to do to solve crime in the black community. So the police, guess what? Won't have to go there. Because when I was in patrol, and part of my patrol zone was what you would consider the suburbs, do you think I got calls to go there? I may have had a domestic here and there, but I didn't get a robbery call. I didn't get a shooting call. I didn't get a drug call. I didn't get those type of calls because that's not where the crime happened. So, go learn what crime is, go learn what police go through, and then come talk to me, come talk to all these other officers that you condemn about police reform, and we'll probably tell you to go stick it somewhere. Oh my God, I can go on and on and on. And the more I go in, the more my blood pressure is going up. So I need to stop. So this comes to the end of the show. So what I want to do right now is, everyone knows that every week I do an officer down moment, but I want to change that title. A dear friend of mine told me it was too sad, the title, but I did tell her I was not getting rid of it because someone needs to honor these officers, but I am going to rename it. I'm actually going to call it Roll Call because anyone that's been in patrol, been on the police department knows at the start of your shift, you have what is known as roll call. And it's not roll call as in they call your name and see if you're here like they do in class. But everyone goes to roll call. They're accounted for. Your sergeant puts out any updates. Your lieutenant puts out any updates. And you go out, you do your shift, and you go home at the end of the night. But as we know in police work, everyone doesn't go home. And just this month in February, 7 officers have lost their lives. And I want to do a roll call for those officers. Sergeant Jason Gooding, Seaside Police Department, Oregon. Deputy Sheriff Scott Ballantyne, Turley County Sheriff's Office, California. Deputy Sheriff Derek Greer, Mesa County Sheriff's Office, Colorado. Senior Deputy Mark Lugston, Harford County Sheriff's Office, Maryland. Senior Deputy Patrick Daly, Harford County Sheriff's Office, Maryland. Major Gregory Burney, Riverdale Police Department, Georgia. And Police Officer Jason Moser, Fargo Police Department, North Dakota. Now, all 7 of those officers that I just mentioned were killed by gunfire. And that is in the month of February. Today is the 16th of February. And we just named 7 officers during my roll call. So, if you want to investigate why this problem exists in this country. Don't tell me any crap about a Black Lives Matter movement because someone decided to rob a store 10 minutes before he was shot and killed by a police officer he fought with. You go out and investigate why I just named 7 officers on my roll call. I want to thank you for listening. I will see you next week, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com. Thank you and good night.
To continue the conversation, get updates on the show, and to find out when you can see him on television, follow Vincent on Twitter at Vincent Hill Sr. That's Vincent Hill, S-R. This has been Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill on Radio Influence.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.